Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We're hoping, against hope, we're going to have Dr. Kent Hovind with us, and we're going to be talking about evolution tonight, because this is such a vitally important issue. You see, they have used evolution for almost 100 years to undermine and destroy the faith of successive generations of American children. And this is one of the greatest, actually, scams of all time. How you can get intelligent people to believe in evolution, I'll never know. Well, I do know, because I used to believe in evolution. I was a victim of a liberal education. And when I went to college, we learned all about all the all the various ages, and I've even forgotten all their names. But I do remember, of course, at that time, we had the missing link. There was no question the Piltdown Man was the missing link that had been looked for so many years. Well, of course, eventually it turned out that the missing link, the Piltdown Man, was a fraud, just as the Nebraska Man before him had been a fraud, and the Peking Man and the Java Man, and all of these things were frauds. But you see, it doesn't really matter how many frauds there have been in the past. When the scientists come up and they say, we know that man has been here billions and billions and hundreds of millions of years, and dinosaurs walked the earth, hundreds of millions of years ago, and they don't know any of these things at all. It is all conjecture on their part. And the scientists who really are studying this, are in real problem, because, you see, they see the perfect order in everything. And when you see this perfect order, you realize that this did not happen by chance. There has to be a creator, and if there's a creator, there's a God. And they can't admit there's a God, and so they adhere to their false faith. And yet it takes far less faith to believe that there's a God than it does to believe that everything in the world happened by chance, and life just came about by accident, and even more, of course. Well, if life didn't come about by accident, it came from outer space. And there are still many of the scientists who cling to that idea. Oh, well, that's how we explain life. It came from outer space. And then you ask them, where did life in outer space come from? And they immediately change the subject. And with that as a background, Dr. Kent Hovind. Hi, Kent. How you doing?
Hey, doing great, brother. Actually, Al Gore invented life. He invented the Internet after that.
Okay, well, you go ahead and tell us a little bit about how you got started in your study of evolution. And, and you're debunking this whole incredible scam.
Well, let's see. I became a Christian at age 16. My mother was a public school teacher. My dad was an electrical engineer at Caterpillar Tractor Company in East Peoria, Illinois. My older brother became an engineer, and my second brother became a public school teacher, fifth grade teacher for 34 years, just retired. So I always loved reading and learning as a child. My mom taught me to read early and taught me to love reading, and I was a readaholic, and used to actually read the dictionary and read the encyclopedias and stuff like that. Well, by age 16, I was very thoroughly convinced evolution theory was true. I mean, that's what I'd been taught all my life, but then I accepted Christ as my Savior, and became a Christian, started going to a little independent temperamental Baptist church in Beacon, Illinois. And I said, man, there's a conflict here from what I'm reading in the Bible and what I'm being taught in school. Somebody is wrong. Does that music mean break time? Or?
I think means break time. Are you on a regular hard-to-hand telephone?
Yeah, no, I'm on a super high-powered cordless that I do all my programs from. And
could you get on a regular telephone? Because we got just a little bit of a... Oh, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Kent Hovind, and we're talking about why he came to question the theory of evolution. Because, you see, we indoctrinate our children in public schools. Our public schools are not there to educate. They're to indoctrinate, to destroy religious faith, to plant all sorts of ideas about internationalism and socialism, and the idea that young people are socialist and believe in government because they're so idealistic is just another one of the lies. They believe in socialism and big government because they've been indoctrinated to believe that, because they never hear the truth. And, of course, one of the most important things is education is used to destroy the faith of our children in the God from whom all freedom comes. So we're talking with Dr. Kent Hovind, and he's telling us about what happened and how it was that he got involved, and began to question going to a small church, and then began to question what he'd been programmed to believe in school. Pick up the story from there, Kent. Kent, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. At age 16, I got saved, started going to this Baptist church, and began reading the Bible, and realized, wow, somebody is wrong, because the Bible does not teach billions of years. You know, being a math and science major, I quickly started, when I started reading Genesis, I said Adam was 130 when Seth was born, and Seth was 105 when Enos was born. I said, oh, wait, I can add up these numbers. And so I began going through the Bible and realized many other people had already done the same thing, and I was reinventing the wheel. But everybody that did this over through history came up with about, 6,000-year total history for the world, 4,000 B.C., and so that began a long study. I said, somebody has got to be wrong here. Then when I tried to witness to my older brother's friends who were in college studying science and were strong believers in evolution, I was just shot down in the first few seconds. I couldn't get anywhere with them when it comes to the gospel because of the evolution theory. I really became convinced, if nothing else, this evolution theory is a hindrance to the gospel. It might also be a hindrance to real science and to common sense. But that led to a long study, which has been still going now, 36 years, studying this topic. And I am convinced, after studying it intensely, that the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. God made the world in 6 days, just like he said he did, about 6,000 years ago. The earth is not billions of years old. And the evolution theory that's being taught in our schools is one of the dumbest and most dangerous religions in the history of planet Earth.
And, of course, it really is a religion, because the science really doesn't have anything behind it. Oh, they talk, they have all these pictures that they put in the textbooks that were made 100 years ago, that were discredited 100 years ago, and yet they still put those pictures in our books. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes, but I remember seeing them when I went to college and not realizing they'd been discredited 100 years earlier. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Kent Hovind. We're talking about evolution, and really, of course, how do you convince people of something that just isn't true? I mean, where is the proof that the dinosaurs were here 20 million years ago? How long are they supposed to have been here? You know all that, because you've done a lot of studies on this scam of the dinosaur.
That's one of my favorite topics. Our website is Dr. Dino. D-R-D-I-N-O. My phone number here in Pensacola, Florida is 479-DINO. We like dinosaurs. We have Dinosaur Adventure Land, which is a museum, a science center, and a theme park, and have their own website, dinosauradventureland.com. The thing that confused me the most as a young Christian was the issue of dinosaurs, because I had been taught, they lived millions and millions of years ago, and so it was very confusing as I read the Bible and said it's only 6,000, and the Bible teaches nothing died till Adam sinned. I said, man, who's wrong here? And the truth of the matter is, before the flood came, the Bible says people lived to be 900 years old. Well, you could learn a lot in 900 years, first of all, but reptiles never stop growing. It's just a biological fact. Reptiles grow all their life. So in 900 years, the reptiles would grow to be gigantic. And dinosaurs were big lizards that lived with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Noah then took them on the ark. Probably babies, of course. Just be sure to get a pink one and a blue one. And after the flood, people killed most of them, and they called them dragons in those days. There are literally thousands of legends from countries around the world of people slaying dragons.
And, of course, don't they even talk about something that could be interpreted as a dragon in the Bible?
Well, the word dragon itself is used 34 times. And then in Job 40, it talks about an animal called Behemoth. And if you read it, it's quite obviously talking about a Brachiosaurus or, you know, Apatosaurus, a long-necked dinosaur. And then there's the Leviathan, the fire-breathing dragon, in Job 41. So at least those two. It may be that the tannin, Hebrew word tannin, translated dragon, is talking about a dinosaur in every instance. I mean, so yeah, there's certainly, obviously, mentioned in the Bible, though the word dinosaur isn't mentioned because that wasn't made up till 1841.
All right, but of course they certainly talked about these dragons, and of course dragon was a dinosaur. There's no question at all about that. So how did the scientists explain all the references to the dragons or the dinosaurs in recent years? Because certainly man hasn't been around here for more than 6,000 years. At least he hasn't been writing up records. So what do the evolutionists do with all these references to dinosaurs? Do they say these folks didn't know what they were talking about? Because we know they were here millions and millions and millions and millions of years ago, or do they simply ignore all of the historical evidence of the fact that these dragons or dinosaurs were living here at the time that man was living?
They pretty much ignore it, and even though there have been 20,000 reported sightings of dinosaurs in the last 100 years, they will say, well, all those people are stupid, you know, after all, we're smart and they're dumb. Basically, that's what it boils down to. It's pretty sad.
All right. Well, let's of course get into the background then of so much of what's taught in school. Because really the purpose of teaching evolution in school is to destroy religious faith in God. Wouldn't you believe that? Wouldn't you agree with that?
I'm not even sure we should have public schools. I think we should reexamine the whole picture and say, why are we doing this? Why are we putting kids in a situation, you know, that it breeds atheism? It's sad.
Well, I think even more than that is, why aren't the ministers willing to speak out, you know, and say, you know, if you love your kids, you're going to get them out of the government schools, and we're going to let you use this building, you know, in the meantime, and you can use our yards to have the kids run around in. And, you know, if every school in America if every church was a school during the weekdays, we wouldn't have the problems we have. But I don't think most of our ministers have the courage to do what's right. It's much easier to go with the flow, and certainly wouldn't want to offend anybody in the congregation who wanted to leave their kids in public school or perhaps work for the government.
See, I've never seen the state have any children. You know, the best I've ever seen in my 36 years being a Christian, and in 32 years of being married, only parents have children, husband and wife. You know, where does the state get the idea that these are their children? These children belong to God. They're entrusted to parents. And what they're taught, it ought to be the parents' decision, not the state's decision. It gets into a much more complicated, complicated question of who's in authority. It's basically God in authority or state in authority. And it's no different than it's been for all through history. If you look at the book of Acts, very interesting, there are 28 chapters in the book of Acts. 21 of them record instances of the civil officials, the government, giving the Christians a hard time over their belief. 21 times out of 28, there are problems. And so the state has the idea that, you know, they should be God, and they should control your kids and tell you what the kids are going to learn. And they're going to try to make those kids, you know, good slaves for a new world order coming soon to a city near everybody. I get a little nervous about government involvement in schools where they have just no business being at all, and government involvement in welfare and in health care, and just no business, you know. This is something that people ought to do for themselves, or the church ought to do. But you're right, the pastors have neglected to do their duty, and we've allowed a real serious problem to develop.
All right, fine. Well, let's just go just down the various things that people were going to talk about. And so I'm going to be the devil's advocate here, and I'm going to tell you that we know how old the Earth is because we have carbon dating, and carbon dating has shown, you know, that the Earth goes back billions and billions and billions of years. And how can you, of course, challenge the scientists who've definitely proven that this indeed is true?
Well, first place, none of these dating methods, carbon dating or potassium-argon dating or any of those dating methods, were even invented until the last 50 years. So if somebody tells you, we know the Earth is millions of years old by these dating methods, I would say, wait. You've been teaching the Earth is millions of years old since 1800. The idea that the Earth is millions of years old started in 1800, and so how did you know it back then? Don't tell me you knew it by carbon dating. Nobody even knew what carbon was, let alone carbon dating in 1800. Truth of the matter is, some people came up with the idea the Earth is old in the early, or late, actually, 1795 was the first book written saying, hey, the Earth is probably millions of years old. A guy named James Hutton wrote the book. Some Christians, instead of fighting against that, panicked and said, wow, we've got to figure out a way to make the Bible say the Earth is millions of years old. And so they invented at least six theories to put millions of years into Scripture. Only a few are commonly known. One of the theories is called the day-age theory, that maybe the days are not real days, maybe they're long periods of time. Another theory is called the gap theory, that maybe there's a gap between verse 1 and verse 2. Another one's called progressive creation. You know, God kept progressively creating over millions of years. But instead of fighting against the age of the earth idea, they accepted it and tried to make the Bible say that, which was tragic. So actually, by the early 1800s, say 1830s and 40s, most Christians were going around teaching, hey, the earth is millions of years old. And so when Darwin's book came out, it was just a simple transition to say, well, if it is millions of years old, then there certainly is time for, you know, things to change. And that's all Darwin was saying, was things change. And so the idea of the old earth neutralized Christian resistance to evolution. It was really tragic when you look at the history and the effects of it.
Well, you know, I think the one thing that really impresses me is that there's so many Christians who want to appear to be intelligent and certainly don't want to fight science because science is based upon fact. And so they then try to modify their views to bring them in view with science so that you can't challenge the scriptures. Well, once you bring, of course, the scriptures into view, into alignment with science, you've already undermined the very foundations of the scriptural belief. So, you know, this is one of the great times, great tragedies of our time. I've heard the gap theory. I've heard all of these theories. And I used to actually profess, well, maybe it was divinely guided evolution. Maybe God actually did take all this time that he guided the evolution from the lower species right up, of course, to man, which are all very convenient means of trying to wed the Bible to science, which, of course, is not based upon fact at all, but is based upon an entirely different religion, and that is the religion that man can explain anything to his intelligence, and all you need to do is look around you and see what a mess man is making things.
Well, the problem is not between the Bible and science. The problem is between the Bible and evolution. People make the mistake of thinking evolution is representative of science, and it's not. There's nothing scientific about this evolution idea. And I think it's important, when I do debates at universities, I've had 92 of them now, I try to, first thing, define what we're talking about. When somebody says, okay, we're going to debate on evolution, I say, oh, well, which meaning of the word do you want to discuss? Because once you define the word, the argument really is over. Which is why I've had over 4,000 people refuse to debate me, because I slaughter them real bad, because, you know, I don't let them get by with this trying to switch the definition of the word. I give it six meanings, and if you go to my website, drdino.com, you can see these six meanings to the word, D-R-D-I-N-O. The first meaning of the word evolution, it would be cosmic evolution. That would be the origin of time, space, and matter. You know, the Bible starts off and says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It makes no explanation for where God came from. It just says, you know, he did it. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The evolution theory starts off by saying, you know, there was nothing and it exploded. Pretty dumb, but that's okay. If they want to believe that, that's fine. And then, so cosmic evolution, there's no evidence for this Big Bang theory at all. Secondly, whatever exploded in the Big Bang, they say, produced hydrogen and helium. Okay, well then how do we get all these other elements? We have 92 known elements. What happened? How did they... The chemical evolution would have to come in here somehow. Thirdly, you have to have stellar evolution. The stars have to evolve. And fourthly, organic evolution. Life has to get started from non-living matter. And then macroevolution, where animals change to something else. That never happened. And lastly, microevolution. Now that one happens. That's the only one that happens. It changes within the kind.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Kent Hovind. And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. This is such an important subject, and you have to learn how to be able to discuss it intelligently and point out the flaws in the theory. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Kent Hovind. Doctor, go ahead and tell us a little bit more. Now, you were saying there's six basic types of evolution. Only one of them really is true at all, and that's the microevolution. And that really isn't evolution. That is just different sizes of animals or different types of animals within the same species. But evolution really denotes a change from species to species. And are there any transitional zones of any... examples of transition between species?
Well, I guess I would avoid using the word species and use the word kind instead.
All right, fine.
Yeah, the Bible says they can bring forth after their kind. Example, a dog and a wolf are different species, but they're the same kind of animal. I mean, a five-year-old knows that, okay?
No, but of course they can breed back and forth.
And they can breed back and forth, right? Dog, wolf, and coyote are three separate species, but they can all interbreed. So... nobody's ever given a good, solid definition of species. The Bible word kind, to me, makes much more sense. If they can bring forth, they're the same kind. For instance, a lion and a tiger can bring forth a tigon or a liger. Okay? A horse and a zebra can breed and bring forth. They're the same kind. And probably originally in the Garden of Eden, there was one basic horse kind, which had a really diverse gene pool, and probably the original, whatever you would call it, we would probably call it a horse, but that original animal produced the horses and the zebras and the Shetland ponies and, you know, who knows what other kind of creatures. They may have actually come, maybe even the burro, the donkey, may have come from this original horse kind. So there has been a lot of variations produced within that family, but they're still obviously the same kind of animal. That is not proof that horses and pine cones are related, which is what the evolutionist absolutely doesn't understand. I don't know why they can't see it. The Bible says they're willingly ignorant, you know, or God will send them strong delusion.
Well, don't you think that a lot of it is, though, that if they acknowledge that they're wrong, then the other alternative is there has to be a God, and since they know there's no God, then they're going to cling to this very, very tenuous idea that even in their own heart of hearts they have to know is not true. And so they've got to come up with some other explanation. Oh, we'll have this what is this horrible monster or something of the sort? This idea that you have a bird and it lays an egg and it turns out to be a reptile, something of that sort.
Yeah, that's called the hopeful monster theory.
Right.
Talk about a dumb idea. That's the one going around now.
And so they have to come up with some ridiculous idea, because the only alternative is, of course, we're right and they're wrong, and they cannot believe that. You know, because if you disbelieve in God, what was that saying of G.K. Chesterton? Those who believe in God, it's not they believe in nothing, they believe in anything.
Yeah, if you don't believe in that's a good way to put it.
All right, well then, what are some of the other things that really, some of the other points we can really make when we're debating? I'd like you to explain to our audience how they can begin to hold their own in the debates. They need your wisdom to be able to prepare them to go out in the world and talk to these poor people who are victims of the indoctrination in the government schools.
Well, I encourage people to study the evidence that is used to support the evolution theory has all been proven wrong. We have a little booklet called Are You Being Brainwashed by Your Science Book, is the name of it. And just call it the Brainwashed Book. If you call our office, we'll send you one free, toll-free. You can call our toll-free number, and we'll send the Brainwashed Book. And then you can buy them in bulk if you want to give them to every kid in your high school. But if they call 877-479-DINO, that's the phone number, 877-479-3466, and ask for the free Brainwashed Book, we'll send them one. Basically...
hold that thought right there for just a minute as we... bring our stations back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was asking Ken, of course, how can people learn how to debate this issue? And he was suggesting that if they simply will call his 877 number, he'll send them free of charge a little book that will give them the foundations by which they can begin to argue with. Why don't you get that telephone number and the name of the book out once again so that people will know how to get in touch with your ministry and then begin to learn how to address these issues, because we're involved in a battle of ideas, and we've got to be able to put forward better ideas and at least raise the question of doubt in the minds of these people who are being, really, I think, the ultimate in child abuse is to destroy the faith of our children. So how can people reach you and get that free booklet?
Yes, it's 877-479-DINO, like a dinosaur, 877-479-3466. As extension 1, if we get on my radio program sometime, it's extension 136 on the radio hour, and we'll be glad to answer their questions. But if they can just call that number and ask for a the free book called Are You Being Brainwashed by Your Science Book, we'll be glad to send them one. See, if I had a theory and said, if I said, hey, Brother Stan, the moon is made of green cheese, and you would say, now, Hovind, that's a dumb theory. I'd say, no, I've got proof for my theory. You see, NASA went up there in 1973 on a secret mission that nobody knew about, and they tested and found, wow, the moon is made of green cheese. I would say, wait a minute. It's okay to have a dumb theory. It is not okay to lie about your evidence for your theory. Okay? That would be crossing over the line. It would be worse if I was getting paid by tax dollars while I lied to support my theory. So, if somebody wants to have a theory that we all came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago, okay, that's fine. That's your theory. But then they say, we've got proof for the theory. Oh, yeah, what proof do you have? And they say, well, the humans have a tailbone that they don't need anymore. It's vestigial. That's proof we used to have a long tail. Now, see, that's an example of lying to support the theory. I had an atheist in a debate one time. He said, well, I can prove evolution's true because the humans have a tailbone they no longer need. I said, sir, I taught biology and anatomy. There are 9 little muscles that attach to your tailbone, without which you cannot perform some very valuable functions. I won't tell you what they all are, but trust me, you need them. I said, now, if you think the tailbone is really vestigial and not necessary, then I will pay to have yours removed. Bend over. He did not volunteer. So if parents would just learn what evidences are used to support this theory and how they've been proven wrong, you know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It really happens. So if you're going to argue against evolution, first you have to define the term. What are you talking about? Cosmic, chemical, stellar evolution, stars evolving, or organic evolution, or macroevolution, or lastly, microevolution. I would point out that I have no argument with microevolution. I think it happened. I would agree. We probably, have seen variations within the different kinds. The question is, does it go any farther? And the answer would be, nobody's ever seen anything go any farther. We've never seen a dog produce a non-dog. So whatever they believe on the topic is their belief, not their science.
Okay, well, let's go to Roger, who's calling us from Pennsylvania. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, thanks, Jensen. I'm just loving this so immensely, the best coming on here with the best. And I hope you pick up where you left off when you're finished with me, Ken. I'm just so unnecessarily disappointed with the quality of the defense to the recent issues, newspaper column responses, etc. And just on the terms of the bare semantics of the scientific method, etc. I hope if you don't beat that topic to death today, that you'll both come back soon and do just that. And I'll leave it at that, and God bless.
All right, thanks very much, Roger. Bye-bye. All right, that was Roger calling from Pennsylvania. And so anyway, we're just basically talking about these ideas that are being put forward that really have no basis in fact, and the idea that we have vestigial organs, we have an appendix, or we have certainly have a tailbone, or the fact that the body was not made, that we have all these things that the animals have. Well, we have the same things the animals have because there's a master design, a master designer, and he can't change everything for every structure, but every different species. But there's certain things that work and work very efficiently. We all have an immune system, and all those immune systems work with some variation, but using the same principles. We all have blood, we all have a heart, we all have lungs, and all of these things have been found very, very efficient. In fact, it's pretty hard to live without all of these things. And if you study the perfect order with which everything works, and you wonder, you honestly believe that this could have just happened by accident, if you do, It takes an awful lot of faith to believe that. There's certainly a lot more faith than to believe the very, very simple fact that God created the heavens and earth and everything in perfect order and everything in its place and a purpose for everything under the heaven. We'll be back here in just a moment or two. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Dino. I mean, Dr. Hovind. And, of course, we're talking about this sham of evolution. And yet it's being taught in our schools, and it's being taught for one purpose. And that is, of course, to destroy the faith of our children. And that is why the other side is so insistent that children cannot be even exposed to the idea that there is a God. Because when you begin thinking of it, why, it's sure a lot easier to explain that God created all this, and there is a perfect order in everything in the body. There's a perfect order in everything in the universe. There's a perfect order in the periodic table. There's a perfect order certainly in music and mathematics. Everything in the world is in perfect order, and you mean to tell me that all just happened by chance? I think you've got to have tremendous, tremendous faith to believe that. It's much easier to believe that there is a design, there is a designer, there is a creator, and he has created everything according to their kind. So if you have a question or comment for our special guest this evening, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Kent, first of all, we're going to get everybody to define what they were talking about as far as evolution is concerned. So what do most of your opponents say is the definition of evolution? In other words, they're not going to debate you on microevolution because you have acknowledged that. So what is their point? What point are they going to make?
Well, it's pretty sad. They will say evolution just means change. I say, oh, that's not really what it means. Come on now. Certainly things change. I mean, you can get bigger pigs or pigs with curly tails or pigs with more hair, etc. You know, or dogs might be a better example. There's a lot of varieties of dogs out there. Nobody argues about that. The whole point is, though, the creationist would say, yes, there are changes. However, they are limited. And this is where the evolutionist just goes stark, raving mad and says, no, they're not limited. You can turn a rock to a human if you wait long enough, billions and billions of years. And I say, you're welcome to believe that, but you just left science and went to religion. And they get really upset when you tell them evolution is a religion, because they like to think it is actually scientific. But it's just a fact. Nobody's ever seen a dog produce a non-dog.
And, you know, the thing is, supposedly science is to be based upon, observation and something that is reproducible. You can't just come up with a theory and say it's science. I mean, it's got to be provable. And these things you just can't prove because nobody was around here millions and millions and millions of years ago. And of course, they will then point to the fossil record. And then they'll point to the carbon dating. But how do you address the issue when they point to the fossil record? And, of course, doesn't the fossil record show that evolution is really a reality?
Well, I would point out, first of all, and say, what do you mean fossil record? There's no fossil record.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, and we're just going through some of the arguments you're going to hear that the other side is going to make. And of course, one of them is, well, the fossil record has shown, that we have things around it a billion years old or 2 billion years old. And they have, of course, all these various ages of the distant past. And they can spout off all these names with great authority. But what is their scientific proof of them? So how do you address the issue of the scientific record?
Well, I point out there is no such thing as a fossil record. There are a whole lot of bones in the dirt. I mean, like billions and possibly trillions of them. Okay, but it's not a record. These bones don't have dates on them. They don't, come with a little tag on them saying, I lived such and such a time. And so there is no such thing as a fossil record. And I think Christians have done a great disservice to the whole argument by even allowing them to get by with that. There is no fossil record. Secondly, if you find fossils in the dirt, all you know is it died. You could not prove those bones had any kids, and you certainly couldn't prove they had kids that were different. And why on earth should we think that a bone in the dirt can do something animals today cannot possibly do, which is produce something other than their kind? all we've ever seen is dogs produce dogs, and, you know, flowers produce flowers, and cats produce cats, and there simply are no exceptions to that. So whatever they choose to believe becomes a religion, not a science, and they just simply refuse to admit that. They somehow get this crazy idea that that evolution is science, and it's not. Evolution's a religion in every sense of the word. You have to believe all kinds of things. And I don't mind them believing that. Like I've said many times, you guys, you believe whatever you want, but I resent paying for that be taught.
Well, now, what about these? How does the evolutionist deal with the idea, you know, of the genetics, the perfect order of the human genome, and the fact that we all have really very similar genomes and the same genes, or at least similar genes at all the levels of our various chromosomes? Certainly, this is a magnificent production. How do they explain something that is built with this tremendous order, this tremendous design?
Well, there's no question it's got incredible order. It is taking years and years and years of thousands of scientists working, you know, around the clock, trying to just read the DNA code. You know, they'll spend many hundreds of thousands of hours trying to just read one chromosome and organize the DNA structure. Okay, that's just to read it. Certainly not to make it. You know, they're just now beginning to read it. I think chromosome 14, one of the shortest chromosomes in the human body, had 87 million pairs that they had to decode. And they worked and worked and worked and finally got that one chromosome decoded, which all that means is they have now written out the alphabet that the code is written in. They now know the order. Well, that is nothing whatsoever to do with proving how it came to be. It's like you finally get to where you can read hieroglyphics. Okay, well, that doesn't prove nobody wrote the hieroglyphics. Somebody did write the hieroglyphics on the Egyptian walls of those buildings. So they just now are able to read part of the code, and then they're concluding, see, that proves it happened by chance. I say, guys, you have got to be kidding. You know, you can't possibly be that dumb as to believe what you just said, that, you know, that all they can read the code, and therefore it happened by chance. But that's what we get. And so I'm sitting here in the middle of my library with hundreds and hundreds of science textbooks from publishers all over the world and different age groups, from, you know, 1800s up to 2005 textbooks. All of them that teach evolution will use the same evidence over and over and over as to back up their theory. They say the tailbone is vestigial, which is a lie. One of the ones that bothers me the most is the one they say the baby growing in the mother has gills like a fish.
All right, how do you address that? Because, of course, this is what I was taught when I went to medical school, that those gills, of course, in the fish become the gills that they breathe through, and in America, of course, they become brachial cysts, and sometimes there are even cystic areas in them.
Well, what happened in 1859, Charles Darwin's book was written, and he said, you know, evolution happened by natural selection. The next year, 1860, the book was translated to German, and a professor at the University of Jena, J-E-N-A, read the book and said, oh, wow, what a great theory, if only we had some evidence. Well, this guy was a professor of embryology. He studied the growth of different creatures and how they develop. They go through very distinct stages, you know, first the nerve cord develops and the heart and the brain, and et cetera. And so he studied these different animals and how they developed inside the mother, and he said, he had these drawings of these things, which of course are real tiny, like, you know, eighth of an inch long. He had these drawings in his laboratory, because that's what he did. And back then, microscopes were pretty crude in 1859, 1860 era. But he was teaching embryology at the university. Well, he decided to help Darwin out and fake some evidence for his theory. So he wanted to help Darwin's theory get along better, so he took drawings of these different animals, a fish, a turtle, a rabbit, a human, a duck, etc., and he changed the drawings of the babies and what they look like to make them all look alike. He lied, plain and simple, and said, see, they all look the same. That proves they're related. He traveled all over Germany and pretty much single-handedly convinced the Germans to believe in evolution, which led to the next very obvious step. If evolution is true, then which race has evolved the farthest? And, of course, it didn't take the Germans long to figure out who it was. You know, it was the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Germans, which led to the next obvious step of, hey, if one race is truly superior, has really evolved farther, then it would be best for all of the world if the inferior races were eliminated. Now, we just got to figure out who these inferiors are and wipe them out, and we can really speed up this evolution process and help the whole world get along better. And up comes Adolf Hitler, and, you know, even World War One and the 1870 Franco-Prussian War was basically because of evolution, motivated by that dumb theory. So that's why I tell people the evolution theory is not only dumb, it's dangerous. I mean, we're telling kids they're an animal and they're acting like animals, and it's no-brainer to figure out why.
Now, what was that professor's name? Do you recall offhand?
His name was Ernst Haeckel, H-A-E-C-K-E-L.
H-A-E-C-K-E-L, huh?
Or K-E-L-E. I don't remember the E-L-L-E or E-L.
All right.
Yeah.
And those pictures that we still see that they put in the scientific textbooks to a lie to our children, because I remember seeing those when I went to when I went to college. We had those pictures exactly what you're describing.
They are absolutely a bold-faced lie.
And are they still putting them in the textbooks for our kids?
Well, the newest textbooks I have are 2005 edition, and they're in those.
They are. Well, they're still putting them in the textbooks. So you would think, you know, that somebody would point out to the students, look, they'll lie to you about this, they'll lie to you about everything. Because actually, wasn't he ultimately disgraced? Didn't the people at his university prove that he was a fraud? I mean, that was, 150, 140 years ago, something like that?
In 1875, six other professors at the University of Jena held a trial. It wouldn't be a legal trial like we'd have today, but these professors had a trial because they would, you know, had to keep their other professors in line. And they said, look, Mr. Haeckel, Dr. Haeckel, you have lied. And he finally admitted under pressure. He said, yes, I forged the drawings. He said, but it's okay for me to lie about this because other professors lie in their work also. His justification for lying was the fact that other professors lie also. Well, that makes it okay. So go ahead.
What happened to him? Was he relieved of his position? He certainly should have.
No, he was never relieved from his position as far as I can find in the history. He just kept on teaching. And, you know, and his even though his lie was discredited, it still is in textbooks today, 130 years later. Man, how much time does it take?
Well, I just think it shows how desperate they are to mislead our children.
Something. Yeah, I would say desperate might be the right word.
And they're still putting those fraudulent pictures in, because, of course, if those pictures are fraudulent, then everything they say is fraudulent.
Well, the purpose of leaving that in the textbook is real simple. Number one, that's one of the evidences for evolution, and they really want the theory to be true. Okay. Number two, that's the only way you can justify abortion. You want to be able to say, you're not killing a baby, you're just killing a fish. See, they say it starts, if you just memorize the word farm, F-A-R-M, they go from a fish to an amphibian to a reptile to a mammal. That's supposedly the evolutionary sequence. Well, they'll say, see, in the first few months it's got gill slits and it's just a fish, so go ahead and have an abortion because there's nothing wrong with killing a fish, is there? You know, here's this poor innocent girl says, oh yeah, you're probably right, and so she murders her baby and then has haunting memories the rest of her life, you know, of this thing. It's murder, plain and simple. It doesn't mean they can't be forgiven, but it is murder. Half the Bible's written by murderers. They should confess it, forsake it, say, God, forgive me, I'm sorry, and, you know, go on and serve God with their life. You know, it's not the unpardonable sin.
Well, let's go to Ari, who's calling from Redwood City. Hi, Ari, how are you doing?
Just fine.
Have a question or comment for our guest?
I have a question. I wanted to ask about the so-called life and death cycle of stars. You know, sometimes you see in science magazines that they have telescope photos of a star dying, and that supposedly takes millions of years. What do you have to say about that?
Well, we have about 900 known, what's called a supernova ring from a star that dies. There seems to be pretty well understood, I mean, considering the great distance, pretty well understood sequence of what happens. As a star burns out its fuel, it reaches a critical mass where it all of a sudden swells up really big like a marshmallow over a fire, and then, poof, gives one final spurt of energy and then collapses into a little tiny white dwarf. I don't argue so much with the star sequence that, you know, the way they say things happen. It's probably, you know, that's probably pretty correct as far as how stars die. The problem is, how do stars get born? We've never seen one star forming. We see stars blow up about every 30 years. There's a new one that's discovered, a new supernova. And if there's only like I think 300 is the number that has been found. 300 supernova rings have been observed in the universe. So far, that's all that has been found. Well, if one's every 30 years and there's only 300, that's less than 10,000 years worth of supernova rings. You know, why aren't there billions of these, number one? Number two, why do we only see them dying? We never see them be born. The last estimate, 2003, I guess the Hubble counted the stars in a section of space, and just by extrapolation said there are probably 70 sextillion stars that are visible in the universe through these telescopes, which means there are 11 trillion stars per person. Every single person, man, woman, boy, and girl on Earth can own 11 trillion stars to themselves. Yet we've never seen one form and don't even have any good theories of how they could form. Now, Sky and Telescope magazine ran an article about this and says we don't even have a good theory of how a star can form, let alone proof that one did, basically. So if they want to believe it happened, that's great. Just believe whatever you want. But it's not science.
All right, anything else, Harry?
That's it. Thanks a lot.
All right, fine. Thank you. Yeah. You know, one of the things that we actually hear discussed all the time is, well, you know, there was this star and it blew up 500 million years ago, but now we're just beginning to see that because, of course, it takes light so long to get here, 186,000 miles per second per second. And so, you know, we're seeing the light now that was produced, 100 million years ago has now traveled from that distant star to Earth. And so if the Earth is only 6,000 years old, how do you explain that?
Well, they're always worried about how did the light get from the star to the Earth. They're not even considering the other possibility of how did the star get from the Earth to its current position. The Bible says that God made the Earth first, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, 2, and 3. And then in verse 14 it says he made the stars also. I have always said there are 11 references in Scripture, and somebody said, no, Mr. Hovind, there are 17 references in Scripture where the Bible says God stretched out the heavens. Well, if he stretched out the heavens and he did it from here, then the question is not how did the light get from the star to here, but how did the star get from here to there? So Adam would see the star light on the first day, even though the star is rapidly receding or being stretched out into its current position. There are several things to consider about the starlight. Number one, you cannot measure those big distances. Whenever somebody says to you, that star is 10 billion light years away, I say, right, how did you measure that? You know, was it a Lufkin, a Craftsman, or a Stanley, and who held the other end of that tape measure? I want to meet this guy. So you just can't measure those numbers. Number two, and that's not to say they aren't that far away. They probably are, but nobody knows. You can't measure beyond about 100 light years with any accuracy, and even that's real skeptical, up to 100 light years. So number two, there's no possible way anybody's going to ever prove the speed of light is consistent all through space or all through time. There have been a lot of experiments done in the last few years about the speed of light not being a constant. Your last caller from Redwood City, I'm assuming that's San Francisco suburb, right, California?
Well, yeah, right. It's about 75 miles from here.
Yeah, I lived 3 years up in Fairfield. I'm preaching this weekend in Lompoc, California, down in Southern California. Last weekend, I was in Santa Barbara.
Well, look, if you want to put a plug in for where you're going to be talking, just in case anybody in those areas would want to hear you.
Yeah, Lompoc is way down, well, probably 100 miles from Los Angeles, well, further.
We probably have some listeners down there. Is there any place people could call and find out about your talk?
Yeah, if they go to my website, Dr. Dino, and go to the itinerary, all the details are right there, or they can call my office if they have any problems. It's the Calvary Chapel I'll be speaking at in Lompoc, L-O-M-P-O-C.
All right, the Calvary Chapel in Lompoc, that'll be this weekend, and then what after that?
Then I'm in Quebec, Canada, in Boucherville, actually, which is a suburb of Montreal. And then I don't know, I have to look at my calendar. I speak 900 times a year, I lose track after a while.
Well, now, is that including your radio interviews, or is that separate from your radio interviews?
Well, I guess that's not counting radio. I should count those too. But no, I'll go to a church and speak five or six times in one day, you know, different sessions. And then you do a lot of schools during the week and stuff like that. Counting all the radio, it's probably over 1,000. I don't know. I keep pretty busy.
Well, I'm glad you do, because I think it's such an important message. And once, of course, that people begin to understand that they have been lied to by their teachers, they've been lied to by their professors. But even more than that, they've been given textbooks that have pictures that were discredited 130 years ago or more. I mean, that is the most incredible story of Dr. Hegel, and but I remember how convincing those pictures were. that when I, of course, saw them many years ago when I was a student, that was, what, 50 years ago. But, see, this is the value of a picture. It's indelibly imprinted on your mind. That's why television is such a force for evil. Of course, it can be a force for good, but unfortunately, we don't control the major networks. They were bought up long ago by people who had an agenda, and they're using that agenda, of course, to destroy the freedom of the people in this country and, of course, to destroy their faith. Well, we've got Tom calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
No, it's Ron.
Ron. Oh, Ron from Richland, Oregon?
Washington, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is just a comment. I was a judge on the Science Bowl, and they had a test about the... one of the questions was about the evolution of the feathered dinosaur.
All right. Well, why don't you hold that thought, and we'll get back here in just a moment, and you can you're going to tell us about the feathered dinosaur. This is our special guest this evening is Dr. Kent Hovind, and we're going to be, of course, talking a little bit more, and we'll be talking about the feathered dinosaur in just a moment here, right here at Radio Liberty. Right, we've got Ron from Richland, Washington. Ron, tell us about the feathered dinosaur.
Well, there was a question on the Science Bowl about the evolution of the feathered dinosaur, something about Tyrannosaurus rex or something like that. It was absolutely wild speculation with, to me, no basis in fact. A bunch of evolutionists who desperately want their theory to be accepted. I protested it. And I haven't really followed up on it.
Now, were you were a judge on this?
Well, we'd be out, but they give us a canned questions and canned answers.
And you were supposed to go along with this spacious discussion then.
Oh yes, to me it's not a science bowl; it's a speculation bowl.
Right. Okay.
And I don't think we should be asking questions like that.
Well, of course not. But of course, it's how you frame the question, because the question can, of course, produce whatever answer they want. And they use many of our questionnaires to program ideas into the minds of our children. So our kids are under attack on all sides, and there's no way you can beat the system. Anybody who thinks they're going to change the public educational system by getting involved in it, or PTA, or getting on the school board, is terribly naive. The only thing we can do if you love your kids is get them out of it. Anything else you want to say, Tom?
It's Ron, just tell Dr. Hovind to keep up the good work.
He will, certainly.
And you too.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, that was Ron calling. So, somehow or other, we got the wrong name up there on the board. Okay, well, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And our guest is Dr. Kent Hovind, and we're talking about his experience in debating the subject of evolution, which to me is one of the most important issues. And if we could just get our kids to know that they've been lied to, why, we could begin to break the control over their minds. So how are we doing? Do you think we're making any progress, Kent?
I think we're winning big time at the grassroots level. I think students by the thousands are giving up on this evolution theory and are being trained in creation, you know, arguments and stuff like that. I think we're maybe breaking even at the teacher level for fixing the problem. There are thousands of teachers that are not teaching evolution in their schools, even though it's in the curriculum, or they are showing the kids what the textbook says and giving evidence against it, which is just common sense. I mean, you ought to do that. But as far as at the national level, with changing the textbooks or changing the curriculum or changing the laws, we're not winning at all. But that's not necessarily to be discouraging. I'm just saying, Jesus, you know, didn't spend any time trying to change the Roman Empire. Just went after people one at a time.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program. If you believe that what we're saying is true, if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and and for the souls of our children, then we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We're a small voice, but it's a growing voice. This program is probably being heard on 15 stations and a number of microwave stations across America. And it is certainly, with two shortwave outlets and three internet outlets, why people are listening. People have the opportunity to hear us all across America. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Now, we, of course, do carry a couple of books on evolution, and, of course, we'll be letting our guest give his books out, too. We carry something called the Evolution Cruncher, which we think is inexpensive and it's got a lot of great information in it. We carry a book called Tornado in a Junkyard. And we just think that you need to have the information. And then, of course, we want you to go to Dr. Dino's website and get in touch with Kent and get his information as well. He's got some great videos, which we have actually seen. I mean, I don't know. How many hours are those videos that you have?
My regular seminar is about 17 hours. Then I have 20 different debates that I've done on videotape, as well as quite a few other videos. We have over 100 different topics on video that we produce in our catalog. You can go to drdino.com and look those over. That would include some homeschool classes we offer and my four different college classes on much more in-depth on creation versus evolution.
We've actually seen, I think, probably about an 8, maybe it was 8 or 10-hour production of yours, but maybe we missed the last 7 hours. But anyway, it was fascinating. And, of course, Kent, why don't you get your telephone number out just one more time?
Yeah, there's nobody here tonight. We're in Florida, but they leave a message at 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466. And ask them to send the free Brainwashed book. They'll send a catalog of all the materials we offer and a booklet called Are You Being Brainwashed by Your Science Book, which will give them about 20 of the lies in the textbooks and show them, you know, where they were proven wrong. Really give students some ammunition, some armor to hide behind and ammo to fight with.
All right, fine. And, Chris, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I would suggest, if you're out there listening to our program, that you go to our website, which is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you can, of course, pull down our newsletters. You can actually listen to our radio programs 5 hours every day, either directly at RadioLiberty.com or by linking to GCNLive.com or to AmericanNewsNet.com or all of them. And then, of course, you can also listen to our archive programs. And then, of course, we hope you'll look at the list of videos and audio tapes and books that we carry. We do carry the Berkey products and Sanjian radios and other items such as that that do help us to stay on the air. But the most important thing is that you get the information and you learn how to present it to other people. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's Brotherhood of Darkness, which explains the spiritual forces behind this whole attack on Christianity, the spiritual force that energizes our political leaders, our political parties, and that has moved us from war to war to war, and is now moving us, of course, into World War III. Why, we hope that you'll go to our website or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and order the Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, or the special, which includes, of course, the video and the audio tape. That information is vitally important and will help you reach others with an understanding of the spiritual force, which is the common denominator behind everything going on today. And we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty for the next hour of our program with Dr. Kent Hovind. Well, Doctor, stand back here for the second hour this evening. Our guest this evening, Dr. Kent Hovind. And, of course, we're talking about evolution, which is really such an important issue. It is really foundational to the whole attack on Christianity today. And believe me, Christianity is the enemy of those people who would destroy this country. And they realize, of course, that America was founded as a Christian nation. It was founded by Christians on Christian principles. And that major principle was that, you know, if people could believe in God and could govern themselves, then they could be free. And if they couldn't govern themselves, you would have moral anarchy and you were going to have a dictatorship because, as William Penn had said so well, those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And that's exactly what the people on the other side want. So first, they have to destroy the faith of our children, and they're doing such a good a job of that in public schools. And we're fortunate to have people like Kent out there who are going around and, of course, getting the information out. Do you get any invitations to public schools at all, or is it mostly in private schools and actually in churches that you're speaking now?
I do speak in quite a few public schools, not as many as I'd like. I've been probably in, 150 maybe. Since I started doing this ministry. We have public schools come here to our Dinosaur Adventure Land. That's not as many of those as I'd like either, but we're having more and more come now as we're becoming better known. Here we have a science center, a museum, and a theme park all based on creation instead of evolution. The school superintendent for all the schools in Escambia County, Florida, here where I live, Pensacola, he came and loved it and is encouraging his teachers to come and bring their students here. So I wish you get in other countries like Russia, they love creationists to come in and speak in their public school. It's like, hey, please come, tell us about creation. Our kids know nothing about it.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your theme park? If anybody gets down there to Pensacola, they certainly want to go to see it. Tell us about the theme park, how long it's been there, and what people will see if they actually come to it.
We've been open about 3.5 years. It's about 6 acres. It's a combination of three things: a museum, which is really incredible, full of amazing things on the creation topic. For instance, they say it takes millions of years for things to petrify. Well, we have a real petrified pickle. The lid to the jar rusted off, and the pickle inside turned to stone. We have a petrified hammer, petrified charcoal briquettes, petrified octopus arm. Octopus arm is soft tissue and would decay quickly, but here we gotta have a replica of the real ones in South Dakota. But we have in our museum, we have enough stuff to keep people busy all day. However, generally, museum to a kid says boring. Okay, so we have right next door to that our science center, which is all kinds of hands-on science-related activities, where they do things like you would see an exploratorium or something. Or what's the one up in San Francisco, right by the Golden Gate Bridge? Is that called the Exploratorium?
It may very well be. That's probably there by the Palace of Fine Arts.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been in there many, many times, but it's been quite a few years ago when I lived up there in Fairfield. So we have a science center with lots of cool activities. Only at ours, everything we do has not only a science lesson, it has a spiritual lesson. So we want to emphasize both. And then we have a theme park with loads of interesting activities, rides, slides, things outside. And, of course, Florida weather is pretty nice all the time, and things that they can do year-round. A lot of you can just go to our website, drdino.com, or to dinosauradventureland.com. They're both linked together.
All right, fine. And so if you get down in Pensacola, I've heard from people who've been there that it's really a sort of an exciting place to visit. Well, of course, the most important thing for our listeners out there is to learn how to be able to fend off the beliefs of the other side and begin to get people to think. After all, when you've been programmed to believe in evolution, you're not going to give it up. And, of course, a lot of this is a matter of faith. When you finally become a Christian, you realize that, you know, you can't reconcile anyway the Bible with what you've been taught in school. So which one are you going to accept, God's Word, or are you going to accept what you've been taught? But then, of course, the other thing that I think we have to begin to evaluate is how we can approach the people on the other side and raise a question in their mind, because if we can get them to begin to doubt evolution, why they may begin looking for God. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Kent Hovind. And Kent, now some of the other arguments, what are the other arguments that are used so effectively by the people on the other side, or at least arguments that they try to use effectively with you?
Well, they will say, don't you know that the forelimb of just about every mammal has similar structure? You know, you've got two bones in your wrist, the radius and the ulna, and so do just about every other mammal. And a lot of reptiles and even bats and birds and almost all animals have this forelimb structure of, you know, two bones, the radius and ulna. I say, yeah, oh, yeah, I agree. They do. Certainly they do. I agree. And they'll say, see, don't you know that proves they have a common ancestor? I say, wait. No, that doesn't prove any such thing. That proves they have a common designer, but not a common ancestor.
And I think that's such an important point. That, I mean, this is an efficient means, actually, all in the human being. The fact that you have two bones means that you could rotate your hand over to about 180 degrees. But it is a matter of design. And the fact that the animals have it means that they have the same designer that we did.
Yeah, that's all it means. Why do they say, you know, common ancestor? I could point out that the Ford and the Chevy have thousands and thousands of similarities. But that doesn't prove they all evolved from, you know, Morse code, or they all evolved from a skateboard. Similarities prove a common designer, not a common ancestor. And that's where the evolutionists just don't get it. And it's a little frustrating, Dr. Stan, about, you know, after debating with these guys. I do the debates at universities not because I hope to win the professor, you know, though I'd like to. I do it because it helps the students. They can see, wow, these guys who believe in evolution have nothing intelligent to say about their theory.
And I think that is the major thing, I think, in any debate, and even in the many of the programs that we do here on the radio. Why, when we discuss issues, I'm not trying to necessarily convince the person I'm talking to, unless, of course, they're asking a specific question, and then we'll, of course, try to educate them. But it's the response from the audience. It's the people we never hear from out there that are listening, and we're trying to educate and bring to our point of view. And I think that that's what you're doing when you're debating there on the college campuses. Well, do you get very many invitations for debates now today, or has the word gotten around that you better stay away from that Kent Hovind guy?
Well, I debated one professor at in Detroit at Wayne State University, and he started off his part of the debate. Everybody had 30 minutes, I believe, is the way it went. He said, folks, when I agreed to take this, do this debate on creation with Kent Hovind, he said, I got calls from all over the country saying, don't do it, don't do it. He'll beat you because Hovind is the Hulk Hogan of the creationists.
Well, I've never thought of you as either. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Kent Hovind, and our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But this is such an important subject, and you have to know how to present your ideas, and you have to be absolutely certain that you're not going to compromise your ideas just to be popular. Oh, well, you know, I can correlate the old earth idea with the scriptures, and after all, my faith doesn't necessarily rest on the length of time that the earth has been here. Well, why doesn't it? I mean, if the Bible is right, why what it says is correct? And if it isn't right, maybe you ought to start thinking about some other religion. But, you know, the Bible is very, very specific about the length of the earth, and all of the studies suggest that mankind has been on the earth about 6,000 years, and when you begin finding that the evidence that the dinosaurs lived at the same time as human beings, and haven't they actually found evidence of dinosaur tracks and human tracks together, Kent?
They've been found in about 5 locations now, dinosaur and human tracks together. Some people get upset and say, oh, no, that's not true, but yeah, it really is. I just had last week here in Pensacola, Florida, we had our creation boot camp. We had several great speakers come in. Dr. Baugh from Glen Rose, Texas came. He has owns property right there where the dinosaur and human footprints are found together, and you can go there to Glen Rose, Texas, south of Fort Worth, about 40 miles, and see it for yourself. I've been there 5 times. I'm going back in a few, June, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, be over there. Yeah, I think, of course, we don't need to find the footprints together. This is something people get upset about. Scoffers say, oh, those aren't really human footprints or something. I say, guys, nobody's ever found human and chicken footprints in the same rock strata. Does that prove humans and chickens did not live at the same time? Obviously, humans are still, chickens are still alive, so of course you don't have to find the footprints together. I think they have, but we wouldn't have to prove the point. Secondly, I point out that there's been thousands of sightings of dinosaurs still alive. I mean, still alive, like Loch Ness Monster. A friend of mine just got back from Papua New Guinea, where they saw pterodactyls.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And we actually had one over here on the Carmel beaches, didn't we, over in Monterey something?
Yeah, the one that washed up in Monterey in 1925. There's some really good pictures of it on my website. Just have them go to drdino.com, drdino.com, and they can see the pictures of the one. It had a 20-foot neck on it. And had an atheist actually tell me in a debate, he said, that was a whale. I said, look at that neck. It's 20 feet long. What do you mean it's a whale? He said, yeah, it looks like a whale to me.
What a whale of a neck, anyway.
I said, where's the neck on a whale? I mean, come on. Anyway, they're really desperate to believe their theory. I mean, you got to admit.
We've seen some of these pictures and these stories of them having pulled up these sea creatures in the past, certainly, you know, they've had them, and usually they don't do them, they throw them back, but they've taken pictures, and these certainly ain't any normal fish at all, that's for sure.
That's for sure. So I wouldn't say there's millions of dinosaurs left, but there are some still around, and we have been so lied to about this whole thing that it's time to have another revolt. Here's the problem. The guys who started this country years ago had a philosophy, and they put it down for us on paper. They said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator with certain rights. Well, where do rights come from? You know, they come from the creator. But if there is no creator, now where do rights come from? Ooh, well, now you got a problem.
Well, the obvious answer is they came from government, and that's what it's really all about. Either we accept, you know, the founders' belief in the creator and the fact that our rights come from God and we have a right to be free, or we accept what they would teach us in school, and that is that all rights come from government and we become slaves of the all-oppressive government. Well, we've got Pastor Frank calling from West Virginia. Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Hi, good to have you with us.
Well, it's good to be here, and I'm really appreciate your guest. I agree with everything you all are saying. I have a question, though, that I just wanted to get some clarity on.
All right, fine. He's a lot better at it than I am. Go right ahead.
Okay. Dr. Hovind, I have a question. You mentioned dinosaurs, for instance. I have one in particular. It's an alligator. I guess if it were extinct, it would be considered a dinosaur. If you look at the teeth, you notice they look like they're made for carnivorous activities. And we both know that in the beginning, God created everything that it was not. There were no carnivorous animals, otherwise death would have occurred before the fall. I'm wondering if you could explain to me, if I understand correctly, did God change through a further, for lack of a better word, creation or transformation, maybe, at the time of the fall when the curse was brought upon the earth with Adam and the creation to make things, some things carnivorous, some things omnivorous and herbivores and so forth?
All right, that's a good question. I never even thought of that. Do you have any thoughts on that yet? Because I sure don't.
There are things such as recessive genes that are recessive traits that can become pronounced. Like there have been children that are raised by wolves, for instance, feral children. You know, the baby wanders off or the wolf drags it home and nurses it and raises it like a baby wolf. And there have been, you know, not too many today, but in olden times there have been quite a few reports of this, feral children. And their teeth are different. I don't know. Recessive traits, I guess, can become a little more pronounced. Another thing to consider, you've seen a saber-toothed tiger skull or a cast of one of those. You know, they got the huge,
yes,
long teeth.
Carnegie Museum.
Sure. Would you say that's a meat-eater or a plant-eater?
Well, from the look of the, where there's canine teeth. Looks like a meat eater from those, but I don't recall looking at any of the other teeth. I just don't recall.
Okay, are you anywhere near a computer where you can go on a Google and do a search real quick?
I'm afraid not, sir.
Okay, write this down and check out. Go to just a Google or a Yahoo search engine and type in Chinese water deer. The Chinese water deer is amazing. It's a deer. It's real short. It's only like 18 inches tall. It has teeth just like a saber-toothed tiger.
Hmm.
Really, really long teeth.
I think I've seen a picture of one.
Chinese water deer. Yeah, I'd like to order one of those for our science center here, but they're $140 for a casting of the skull. So if you look at a panda bear, they've got ferocious-looking teeth, but they're a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the teeth of a fruit bat, man, you talk about sharp teeth. We've got a fruit bat stuffed and mounted in a museum here.
Oh, they're
really, really
beautiful
sharp teeth.
Creatures. Yes,
yeah.
Fruit eaters.
Fruit, they'll eat fruit. So the Bible clearly says that everything was commanded to eat fruits and vegetables and seeds in the original creation, Genesis 1, 29 and 30. Did they do it? I don't know. You know, they were told to.
Good case in point. I'm getting ready to feed a nocturnal animal I call a West Virginia monkey. It has monkey-like feet with an opposable thumb on the hind legs and also a tail that it can hang from trees. You know him probably as a possum.
Right.
and it's primarily a plant eater. I just really relishes broccoli and a variety of different vegetables and fruits. It will take meat, but it surprisingly, meat makes up a small part of the diet. Carrion is also part of the diet, but that's just kind of happens to be available, and they're are opportunistic, and that's usually where people see them rather than, you know, people don't walk through the woods at night. They drive on the road, and that's, you know, about the only time they see possums. So, yes, indeed, their teeth, they have more teeth. Now, note this, more teeth than any other mammal in North America. And if you look at them closely, they're very sharp, very pointed, look just like a carnivore, similar to a cat's teeth, I guess, if you compare that to a common animal. However, they just are primarily plant eaters.
And do you have a pet possum?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir, I'm... wildlife specialist.
All right.
Wildlife programs, and that's one question. I agree with you, Dr. Hovind, on that. I just want a little further confirmation with somebody who's more expert in that area. Could you speak briefly, maybe, on to the issue concerning Tyrannosaurus rex and the I forget the name of the organ. It's similar to a chicken's gullet or
like a gizzard or something like that.
Gizzard, yes, where they have a stone. A stone has been found in one of them for grinding.
Yeah, quite a few of the dinosaurs had these apparently gizzard stones. There would be, you know, 20 or 30 of these rocks. And of course, in some of the big ones, they're golf ball size. And they're all really smooth. They're rounded off from just constant wear grinding food up. Chickens do a similar thing. Most birds will swallow a few rocks, and it becomes in their crop. It's called a gizzard or a crop. This would indicate they eat plants, actually, because they have to be ground up. They don't have teeth to chew it. They just have teeth to tear it. And let's assume the Bible is correct, and the earth was very different to be in the original creation. People lived to be 900, and the fruit and vegetables got to be gigantic. So now you need these big teeth just to tear through the skin.
Mm.
T-Rex is front through the skin of a pumpkin. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The T-Rex's front arms are so tiny, they're basically useless. He certainly couldn't hold anybody while he was biting them. He could barely use them. He could barely reach his own head, let alone wrap around somebody's neck while he and hold him while he's, you know, biting him. I think you'd find many experts that on dinosaurs would tell you that T-Rex was probably a vegetarian or a scavenger, but certainly not a ferocious meat eater.
Okay, well, I hope that answers your question, Pat.
Yes, indeed. Thank you both. I appreciate you, and God bless you both.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our last caller was from West Virginia, and, well, we'll be back in just a moment here. And we'll just, looking forward to all sorts of exciting questions here in the next 40 minutes. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Kent Hovind. And Kent, you know, one of the stories we hear very often is about, you know, somebody's digging down in a glacier and they find a frozen mastodon, or one of these big old elephants with big tusks. And, you know, he's up in Canada or something. You wouldn't expect it to be something like that in the northern hemisphere. And of course, they look in their stomach. It's full of all sorts of green grass. So something cataclysmic happened, and these massive creatures suddenly were frozen to death almost instantaneously. What's this all about?
Well, that's a fascinating question, and I've got an hour and a half answer to that on my video number six.
All right, fine. Well, we've only got about 40 minutes. You're going to have to cut it short.
Okay. We call it the Hovind theory of what happened to the mammoths, what caused the flood in the days of Noah. You know, why would the world flood? Where'd all the water come from? Where'd the water go? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And we answer all kinds of questions. There are basically two different theories among Christians about the mammoths. The mammoths are very fascinating in that they're found with food in their stomach, as you mentioned, and food on their teeth still. They didn't even swallow the last bite. And they died of suffocation, which is really confusing. How do you suffocate an animal that's, you know, 15 feet tall? And there's no water, or the water, ice crystals found in the blood indicate they froze really fast, like 5 hours, froze solid. Well, you can't freeze an elephant in a regular freezer unless you get it down to 300 below zero. It's just simply not going to freeze. It'll take 5 days to freeze an elephant. So I think we have to come up with a theory that would answer a whole lot of interesting questions. What froze the mammoths? How do you freeze them standing up with food still in their mouth and suffocate them? They didn't drown. No water in the lungs. So in the Hovind theory, I cover one option is that the creatures, the whole Earth was bombarded by an ice meteor from space, like a Halley's Comet. And most of the comets we see flying around are super cold ice, like, you know, 300 below zero. So if this happened, then a meteor coming through space collided with the Earth, or the Earth, you know, it broke apart and most of it was dumped around the poles because of the Earth's magnetic field. But super cold ice was dumped on the North and South Pole in the form of, like, giant snowdrifts developed, burying the mammoths, suffocating them, standing up, freezing them real fast because we're talking 300 below zero. And so that's how we find the frozen mammoths. That's called the Hovind theory, that maybe an ice comet was involved here. And we cover that on video number six. Look at our website, drdino.com, drdino.com, and they can listen to the whole seminar, but they'll miss out on 7,000 pictures. They can watch part one and part two on the Internet, Dr. Dino. It's one of the downloads, but they'd have to actually buy the rest of the series if they want to get them all.
Okay, well, is there another theory of that? You said there were several theories.
Well, another theory is that the mammoths just slowly froze over after the flood was over. I think that has serious problems because, you know, to freeze them standing up with food still in their mouth, I just don't think it's going to be a slow process. Plus, you got the problem of the incredible preservation, and the rapid freezing indicates much colder temperatures than you're going to get normally. The coldest temperature ever recorded is near the South Pole. You got down to -127. Well, that's real cold, of course, but that's still not cold enough to freeze the mammoths in the condition that they're found. You got to have something 300 below zero, and that only occurs in outer space. The only place it gets that cold.
Okay, fine. This is Dr. Stan, and this is Dr. Kent Hovind, and we've just been talking about this story of the mammoths, you know, being frozen somewhere in the northern hemisphere. This whole great big 15-foot high mammoth frozen with the food in their teeth and food in their stomach, and some sort of cataclysmic event had actually occurred. There's something that we really don't understand. Kent suggested it might have been an ice meteor from outer space actually striking the Earth, because to get something that terribly cold, you just don't see that ordinarily. It would almost have to come from space. So that certainly is one theory, and maybe there's some things that we will just never understand until the Lord comes. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of things we're not going to understand until the Lord comes. And then we're going to say, oh, now I get it. You know, why didn't I see that before?
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number, if you're out there and you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, there are really so many arguments that the people on the other side utilize. You know, and I think one of the biggest ones is, well, maybe life began in outer space. Now, what do you do when they come up with that? You know, because since it can't really explain the origin of life here on this Earth because it's too complex, even its simplest forms, well, maybe it came from outer space. So how do you deal with that ridiculous answer?
All that does is push the problem off where you can't study it. That's not an answer. That's a diversion. They're going to say, well, life's so complicated, it must have come from space. I say, well, first place, that's not an answer. Okay, secondly, how did it happen out there? Okay, you're avoiding the question. Thirdly, you got these incredible distances involved. How are they going to travel? I mean, explain how they get here and how they survive that incredibly long journey. At any speed possible, you know, it's going to take a long time. And so, it's a dumb idea. I think that's just an example of the dumb ideas they use to support this theory, you know, that we all came from a rock.
Well, of course, the alternative, of course, that God created the heavens and earth, but certainly, what are some of the other major points they make when, of course, you're debating them? Because they must have a lot of diversionary arguments they use to try to get you off the subject.
Oh, yeah, they'll say, well, all scientists believe in evolution. Who do you think you are? I say, wait. First of all, it's not true that all scientists believe in evolution. I mean, all branches of science in the last 400 years were started by creationists, not evolutionists. Evolution is a useless theory. It's done nothing in the progress of science. Absolutely useless, counterproductive. Well, the guy who invented the MRI has quite a few patents and is a genius scientist. He's a young Earth creationist like me. There are lots of scientists who are creationists. There is a real strong prejudice against, you know, creationists in the scientific community, because if you do research that seems to support the creation idea or doesn't support the evolution idea, you lose your grant money, or you'll be ostracized or get kicked out of your university here. You're sent to academic Siberia.
Well, I suppose, though, if you invented the MRI and had all those patents, you wouldn't have to worry about losing your grant money.
I guess not. Got plenty of good have. So it's not true that all scientists believe in evolution, but that's what they try to get across. They try to get that idea across that, oh, all scientists believe in evolution. I say, man, you don't understand. That is simply not correct.
And so what's their response when you point out that that really isn't true?
Well, that's one. It's sad that they even use that as an argument to say, well, the majority believes something. In first place, it's not true that the majority believe it. Secondly, what difference would that make? That's not how you determine truth in an argument. You don't decide truth by majority opinion. And so that just shows their sheer desperation, in my opinion, of how desperate they are to support this theory. I say, well, everybody else believes it, so you better get in line.
Well, what happened when you debated the professor who said that he was warned not to debate you?
Well, it's debate number 12 of my series, which you can look at my website, Dr. Dino, and order that. They're $10 a piece for these debates, and most of them are 2 or even 3 hours. He should have heeded the advice. I really slaughtered him. Sweetly, of course, in Christian love.
Well, you know, of course, the problem is that, you know, their whole philosophy, their whole very essence is built into this idea that there is no God. Because, you know, if there is a God, then they're going to have to acknowledge there's something greater than they are. And, you know, for the scientist who, you know, has been brought up in this philosophy, why, this, of course, destroys everything that they've been trained in. You know, all this knowledge that they have really is for nothing. Who cares about all these ages of, 100 and 200 and 500 million years ago, if the Earth is only 6,000 years of age? What do you do with all this knowledge if you suddenly find it's all a lie? And really feel sorry for the scientists that are in that position, because, of course, the very foundation of their belief is under attack. And who knows? Perhaps some of these people, after evaluating the truth, will come to the same conclusion that both Ken and I have, and that is that the God really did create the heaven and the earth. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening, Dr. Kent Hovind, who is known as Dr. Dino, who has been challenged many times to debate, but is having a very hard time finding any scientists who will debate him, because of course their basic philosophy is really based upon nothing but speculation. Now, what do you do when they bring up Lucy? Because of course the people always want to bring up Lucy. Well, Lucy is the missing link.
Lucy was nothing but a chimpanzee-type animal. It's 3 feet tall. 40% of the skeleton was found. They named it Australopithecine. Since then, several others have been found. I'm not sure how many, but all of the Australopithecines are obviously chimpanzee-type animals. It's not a missing link at all. It's interesting. The guy who found Lucy is named Donald Johanson. He was given grant money and sent to Africa and said, look, you find a missing link or no more money. 2 weeks before his grant money ran out, he discovered Lucy.
Now, didn't they find Lucy over a rather a large distance? She wasn't all in one place, was she?
Well, most of Lucy's bones were in one place, but the knee joint that was labeled Lucy in National Geographic 1985 edition was actually found a mile and a half away, 200 feet deeper in the strata. You know, if that's Lucy's knee, I want to know how fast the train was going that hit that chimpanzee. That's what I want to know. But I point out to them, guys, Lucy is 3 feet tall. It's not a missing link. People that have studied Lucy's bones say it's not a missing link. It's a chimpanzee-type animal. So, and it's absolute sheer desperation to say that a bone you found in the dirt is evidence of any kind of theory, because you couldn't prove Lucy had any kids. You certainly couldn't prove she had different kids. And so, or had any kids at all, or kids that lived, or different kids. So that's just desperation on their part, I think.
Well, I think that so much of really what's going on today is a sign that they have a theory that's in having real problems, and with many, many people out there who are debating this subject and writing on this subject, and I really think that some of the scientists really have actually taken the pro-creation position, and they've come under tremendous attack. Well, you know, if we really have academic freedom and free thought, why do they bother to attack and humiliate and demonize anybody who disagrees with them? You would think, of course, that their ideas were built upon a sound foundation. They would not have to be as vicious in their treatment of anybody who disagreed. And yet, isn't that really the case?
Oh, it's extremely vicious. See, there's a whole lot more to this than just the creation-evolution aspect. If the creation story is true, then there's a creator. And if there's a creator, well, then maybe there are some rules.
Pull that off right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening, Dr. Kent Hovind, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And as Kent was just saying, the very crux of this whole debate is the fact that whether there is a creator or things happen by accident, if there is a creator, then there must be a God. And if there is a God, there have got to be rules. And if there are rules, that they're going to have to abide by them or be answerable to him. And they can no longer be their own God. They can no longer do whatever they want to. They're going to have to do what, of course, the creator of the heaven and the universe has told them to do. And there are a lot of these people who don't want to do that. They want to be their own God. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yes, sir. That's my observation. They just don't want God telling them what to do. I mentioned this when I spoke at Berkeley about a year ago. I spoke for 2.5 hours at UC Berkeley. Talk about a hostile audience. Man, oh man, they were really upset. But I asked one of the students there, because he was really getting a bit out of shape, and he said, evolution is a fact. I said, well, answer me this, son. If creation's true, I mean, suppose I'm right. Suppose there's a creator, and suppose there really are some rules, you know, like thou shalt not steal or lie or cheat or commit adultery or fornication or pornography, etc. I said, would that change your lifestyle any? He said, well, totally. I said, okay. Now, have you accepted evolution because you really have scientific evidence, or have you accepted evolution because of the freedom it gives you from God's rules? He said, oh, because of the freedom from God's rules. I said, well, good. At least be honest, all right? Don't tell me you got evidence for your theory. You don't. You believe it because you like your freedom from God. End of story.
And so what was his response?
Well, he admitted it. He said, yeah, that's why. He said, I'm hoping to find evidence for evolution. I said, yeah, okay, I hope you do too someday. But until then, you might as well admit you've accepted the theory because of your sin, not because of your science.
That's a very good point. Well, let's go to Ed, who's calling us from Utica, New York. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan, and wonderful subject tonight. I think it's one of the most important that we have.
And it's getting awful late back there where you are, isn't it?
Well, you know, I wouldn't normally stay up, but Dr. Hovind has created in me a very great interest in this subject.
Well, I'm glad you did stay up. So do you have a question for our guest this evening?
Yes. I was wondering what Dr. Hovind might think about the possible influence of spiritual beings on physical things.
Boy, that's just not something I get into much. I mean, I see in the Bible where, you know, the demons did various things, and angels certainly were able to kill people. One angel killed 185,000 of the enemy in one night, so that's just not my field of expertise. I don't know.
What did you really have in mind, Ed? Where are you going with that question?
Well, of course, I was thinking of what happened in the pre-Noahic flood, the possibility of those who were what they call sons of God.
You're talking about the Nephilim now, the offspring of the sons of God who mated with women. Go ahead.
Right.
And of course, these were the Nephilim. These were the giants, and they were apparently very amazing beings. So where were you going with that thought?
Well, I thought perhaps there had been, even since that time, some influence on the formation of the physical beings that are on Earth today.
That's a possibility.
Changes.
I think there's a very real possibility, because pretty behind everything going on today are these spiritual forces, and unless we recognize that, we can't understand anything that's going on today. Not a long way away from the Kent's field of expertise, but you know, I know a little bit about this, and the more I study it, the more I'm convinced that there really are these demonic forces, and the only protection we have for ourselves and our family is the protection that God can give us, because there's no way that we can address these spiritual forces on our own. I mean, Jesus Christ had the ability to address the demoniac, the man who was possessed by demons there at Gerizim on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. But you know, you and I try to do that on our own, we're going to be in trouble. You can, of course, claim the name and blood of Jesus Christ, and, of course, cast out demons, but you really better know what you're doing, because otherwise you can get into real trouble doing it.
Mm. I have one other comment. I was thinking, you know, if they are so willing to lie so extensively about this issue, justifying their position on evolution, they aren't reticent to lie about everything else, are they?
Kent, we have one to respond to that. The remark is, if they're willing to lie about evolution, they certainly wouldn't be hesitant to lie about everything else.
That's exactly correct. The Bible says all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire. God hates lies. I mean, there are numerous instances. It's in the Ten Commandments. You know, thou shalt not bear false witness. Don't lie. It's just a real serious thing. God's the lover of truth, and Satan's a liar and the father of it. John, Book of John tells us that. He's a all lies. So, yeah, it's sad that these lies are allowed in our textbooks. It's sadder yet that we're paying for it, and that the students are believing it, and it's destroying their faith.
And, you know, the worst thing, as far as I'm concerned today, is our college and university system that is being used not to educate our children, because if it's being used to educate our children, they're doing a pretty poor job of it. It's being used to indoctrinate our children and turn them against God. And when you understand that, and probably the most important thing that a parent can give their child is a belief in God. And you put them in the schools, they're going to wipe that belief out. There's just no way you're going to be able to protect them from it. Anything else, Ed?
Well, no, there's nothing else right now, but I certainly ask for God to bless you, and we pray for you, Dr. Dr. Stan, and also Dr. Hovind. I really appreciate your ministry.
God bless you. Thanks so very much, Ed. Bye-bye. I really do appreciate your prayers. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And well, I don't know where that came from, but anyway, this is Dr. Stan, and give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for our guest this evening, Dr. Kent Hovind. And we're just sort of covering the whole gamut of the things that are going on in our society today, because believe it or not, the subject of evolution is seminal to an understanding of what's happening in our society today. And I think Kent pointed this out very well when he pointed out that America was founded by men who believed there was a creator and our freedoms came from the creator. Now, one of the things I've noticed that you actually get into in your discussion is the subject of population control, and that certainly is one of my favorite subjects. Would you like to expound on that just a little bit?
Yes, sir. It's always been the goal of Satan to reduce the population to zero. I mean, he just hates humans, period, okay? Maybe it's because of the prophecy in Genesis chapter 3 where the Lord said someday the seed of the woman's going to bruise his head. It's kind of like Pilate, you know, when he wanted to kill baby Jesus in Bethlehem. He killed them all. You know, let's go kill all the children to be sure to get the right one. Well, Satan's mentality is such that he wants to kill all humans, and he has put it into the minds of some of the people on this planet that we really should reduce the population. And they probably don't realize that this is satanically motivated. They probably really think they're helping the world by, you know, reducing population. But, you know, everything God says to do, Satan is against it. God said, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, go have a bunch of kids. He said, he created the world to be inhabited. That's the purpose of this planet, to be inhabited. Have a lot of kids. Satan, of course, wants to reduce it. Several things are going to happen, are happening now, and are going to happen even more in the next few years. One, of course, is abortion, where we've had 20% of the entire world's population annihilated, killed, executed in the last, you know, 30 years. That's been tragic. That last 40 years, we've had 20% of the world's population. The genetically modified foods is really going to reduce the population. You know, love of money, root of all evil. Monsanto Corporation is one of the big players in this, developing seeds that will, that are genetically modified, where they have the pesticide built into the seed, so the animals won't eat it. Well, the problem is, when you eat it, there's going to be problems. In Europe, they've banned genetically modified foods. And here in America, 70% of our diet now contains genetically modified food. Vaccinations are going to be another real big player in reducing the population of the planet. These vaccines we're putting in our kids, are it's just tragic what's happening. We're killing them by the thousands, and it's and planting time bombs that are going to kill them later, those that don't die from the vaccine. So, yeah, between the wars, the famines, the pestilence, and all the things coming on this planet, we're going to see a real rapid reduction in world population. I'm thinking in the next, I don't know, not long. Certainly in my lifetime, probably even next 10 years.
Well, they're up to something, because they're focusing our attention through every means of communication on the danger of another flu epidemic. And they're so concerned about this potential of a deadly flu epidemic, they even went up to the permafrost and dug up the bodies with that were infected with the virus of the Spanish flu from 1918 that had killed so many people, and of course they got that in the laboratory. Why would they do something? You'd think they'd let a sleeping dog lie, and certainly a virus that is no longer anywhere in the world. Why would you want to bring that up and bring it back and put it in the laboratory when time and time again there's been evidence that these things have gotten out of the laboratory accidentally under one circumstance or another? That's where the SARS epidemic came from. The man, of course, who started, the first person who died of SARS was a Chinese professor who was working on some sort of chemical warfare agent, and he was the first one to die from it. And then, of course, we had SARS, but They're playing games with our mind. Have you had that feeling as you've been watching what's going on and reading, Kent, that they're focusing our attention and they're talking about the danger of a flu epidemic, and they're writing about the danger of a flu epidemic, and they're warning about the danger of a flu epidemic? Did you ever have the feeling that maybe they're preparing us for something that they're planning?
Oh, absolutely. It's all psychological preparation. Psychological softening is the term they use for it. Yes, I think when something is brought in, like either through vaccines or through chemtrails, go to any internet engine and Google or something and type in chemtrails for chemical trails, chemtrails, you'll be shocked. Pensacola's been sprayed twice in the last few months here. They're spraying the whole countryside during calm days, making big X patterns across the sky, checkerboard patterns. And they're spraying aluminum oxide and other things that are slowly settling down, and it's poisoning the whole world's population. We got a real problem on our hands.
And, you know, the thing is, you tell the average person about that, and they're going to look at you as if, you know, you just came from outer space. In other words, the average person cannot believe it. I think the people who listen to our program, they've heard enough programs on it and enough, documentation that they believe chemtrails are real. But so many people out there, they can't believe that there could be anything wrong with vaccines. They can't believe that the chemtrails are real. They can't believe that there's a plan to kill off over 90% of the world's population, as you talk about in your videos of the Georgia Guidestones, and of course the mystery of the Georgia Guidestones. They never heard of these things. Because they never heard of it, they can't be real.
Well, they're real. There are people, multi-bazillionaires with loads of money, who really, they want control of the planet. And they honestly think that the world has too many people and the only way to save the planet is to reduce the population. They don't realize probably this idea was put in their head by Satan, but that's what they believe, and so they think they're doing the world a favor by reducing the population, eliminating the inferiors, the unfit, etc. It all goes back to evolution. You know, who's in charge of this planet anyway? Is it God or is it man?
And I think it's such a well-put idea that these concepts are planted in people's minds by Satan, and the great tragedy is so many people really believe. We've got Eric calling from Compton, California. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Doc, I apologize. I just got in from work. I've just been listening to about the last 5 minutes of the program. Your guest, is this Dr. Hovind?
Yeah, Dr. Kent Hovind, right?
Did you speak at Hosanna Chapel in Bellflower with Gary Ansdale a couple months ago?
I sure did.
Same guy. Oh, I loved you, man. I loved you. I love the way you attacked the evolution theory. That's my church. I love the way you attack it aggressively.
Well, good. Thank you, sir.
You just had me cracking up. I love you, man. And Dr. Stan, you know about these chemtrails?
Right.
Dr. Stan, I love you. I've been listening to you for almost 10 years now. And sometimes, every now and then, I think you might be losing it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, of course, sometimes my wife tells me that. But
when it got to chemtrails, I looked up in the sky one day, clear day, beautiful clear day. And these planes are going by leaving these trails. So I was, okay, maybe it's just...
maybe it's just contrails, because there's a difference between
exhaust,
contrail,
you know,
and chemtrail, right?
I'm saying it's an exhaust, but you know, exhaust goes away in a few minutes. This stuff just stayed in the air, and all of a sudden, it was a perfectly clear day. In about a half an hour, it was clouds everywhere.
Right.
Said, what the heck is this? This must be these chemtrails, Dr. So once again, you came through again for me, Dr. Stan.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was really very skeptical of this when I first heard about it. And I was very, very hesitant to put this out, because if I come out with something that, you know, it proves to be wrong, why, I'm going to have to eat an awful lot of chrome. I honestly believe that there's something there. And then when you begin really studying it, you find that there actually are a government website that actually talk about this idea of creating a canopy to deal with global warming, and these ideas came from Edward Teller, and they really are putting these things up. But I think probably the most striking thing was when the young man who worked for us came over one morning with the pictures of his trees that looked like they'd simply been decorated for Christmas, all these white bands all over them, and he had some of this stuff in a paper bag for us, and they'd been spraying that morning, of course, and there's, you know, these things are real, they're not imaginary, and we hear this from not simply here in the United States. This is going on all over the world, and the fact that they've been able to conceal it from the American people, is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
Dr. Sen, I've seen it with my own eyes.
Okay. Well, that's the best way. Well, just help us to get the word out. We got actually two great four-tape sets, and we're going to be coming out with some more material very, very soon on that subject. Anything else you want to say, Eric?
No, sir.
God bless. Thanks so much.
I love you. Keep it up.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Kent, did you have any comment on that before we let Eric go?
No, well, yeah, appreciate the time out there in New York. You got plenty of heathen up there to work with. You got a good mission field, so.
All right. Well, Eric is in Compton. A gentleman earlier, Ed, he was calling from Utica. And we've got Larry calling right now. Where is Larry calling? He's calling, from Felton, California. Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Fine. I wonder if your guest could tell me much about the connection between Edward Jenner, Dr. Edward Jenner, and the theory of evolution, and if his theories of vaccinations, animals and humans having the same diseases, help to promote the idea of evolution.
Hold that thought right just a minute. Of course, Dr. Edward Jenner was the pioneer in smallpox vaccination. All right, fine. Do you have any comment at all about Edward Jenner and, of course, the fact that there's a similarity in the diseases between humans and animals?
Well, it's true. Edward Jenner developed the smallpox vaccine. What is not known very well is that if you look at all these pictures in the textbooks of him vaccinating this little boy, later the boy died of tuberculosis. So could it be that the vaccinations, are weakening the immune system so other things will kill you, not that particular disease? But you're the medical doctor, Stan. What's your thinking about vaccines?
Well, of course, I was raised to believe in vaccines. And, of course, I went right along with this. And then, of course, when we began hearing about some of the complications, if we could just only get good vaccines, if we just to take, for instance, the SV40 out of the polio vaccine, or, if we just didn't have the mistakes that they made with the yellow fever vaccine, or the mercury in the vaccines, or maybe the aluminum in the vaccines, And then, of course, I went and I got the government statistics, and we actually have them. We actually got this with great difficulty. And they're in my newsletters. I think it was probably June and July of the year 2003. And if you look and see what had happened, for instance, with measles, you probably had 11,000 deaths from measles at the turn of the century every year. And by 1966, when they started the measles vaccination, we had only 33 deaths from measles. The incidence of death from diphtheria had fallen from the year 1900 to the year, I think, with 1944, when they started vaccinating for diphtheria, 99%. And very similar for both pertussis and tetanus, 93% and 94% for those. So we're told that the vaccines have saved so many lives. But how many lives have they destroyed? And when you realize that they have infected almost the entire population of this country with simian virus 40, which is a cancer-producing virus, and they're lying about it, if you understand that they have destroyed the minds of our children with mercury and the vaccines, many times giving newborns and up to 100 times or 85 times the maximum daily dose of mercury, and they knew what they were doing, quite frankly, I don't trust the people in the U.S. Public Health Service. I think there's some very wicked people there. I think they have an agenda. Now, I think that most doctors don't understand that agenda, because it's very hard to believe that anybody could be wicked enough to want to hurt children. But when you've read the book we carry now called Evidence of Harm, you'll realize that there are people in our government who have been lied, who are lying to the American people and lied to the parents, and they knew they were harming the children, and they did it anyway. So, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening has been Dr. Kent Hovind. Larry, I hope that'll answer your question.
Yes, so you don't think Dr. Jenner is such a hero after all?
Oh, I think that it was a wonderful thing. I think that they got rid of smallpox. I think that was a great accomplishment. I wish it stopped there. And of course, I think that if they'd done the polio vaccine right, we would have been all right. And I think that, but the more vaccines you get, the more problems you get. And, of course, as they're adding new vaccines all the time, what we're doing is creating hypersensitivity in our people. We're seeing skyrocketing rates of asthma, of autism, of all sorts of neurodevelopmental abnormalities, of diabetes. And, of course, you see these only in the countries that are doing the vaccine. So we got a real problem.
I did a search, and I traced vaccinations back to in India and the goddess worship of a certain goddess there. And the vaccinations were a sacrifice to that goddess of smallpox, cowpox.
Well, I think we're going to have to reevaluate everything in the very, very near future.
You know what religion Dr. Jenner was?
I don't.
He was a Jesuit.
I see. Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, well, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for us, Kent, before we let you go?
No, we just want to encourage folks to study up on this topic. This is the central issue, and if they call our office, 877-479-DINO, they can get a free booklet called Are You Being Brainwashed by Your Science Book?
Now, give me that number one more time.
Yeah, 877-479-3466.
And the website one more time.
DrDino.com, DrDino.com.
God bless you. One of these days when you get out in our neighborhood, well, I hope we can get together.
Sounds great. Thank you, brother.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the program this evening with Dr. Kent Hovind, and I think it's he does such a good job in presenting these ideas. So this is the time when, of course, I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener support, and we're really dependent upon you to help us. And if you feel you can, if you believe in what we're doing, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Maybe you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or you can subscribe to our newsletter. If you're in a position to do it, we'd appreciate that. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and our latest one, of course, goes into the story, the Vioxx, which the government and Merck Company released on the market to unsuspecting doctors and patients, knowing that the initial 0090 study, and that's the 090 study, showed a 700% increase in heart attack with low-dose Vioxx. Now, is the cost-benefit ratio worth it? And I don't really believe so, because there are a lot of other things that you could take that would give you far less problems than that. And literally tens of thousands of people lost their lives because of Vioxx, and Merck knew exactly what was going to happen, and they were more concerned, of course, with the profits they were going to make than, of course, with the protection of their patients, who were believing in their wonderful ads of the girls skating across the ice rink with the children in tow. You remember those wonderful advertisements of the very famous ice skater and how grateful she was to have Vioxx and how her life was transformed. And they put those images in your mind, knowing full well that you were going to die. That's our April newsletter. We'd be glad to send you a free copy of that. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. We've got this great new video. It actually is a DVD. And I, of course, talk, and I give you the whole incredible story of the fluoride, not only the water, but of course how they've actually prevented lawsuits as far as the industrial injury from fluoride, how they even have prevented the fluoride from being mentioned in the Clean Air Act, where it's a major problem in the burning of certain qualities of coal. Basically, they hired Edward Jenner, who was a propagandist, to convince the American people that fluoride was going to give them certainly beautiful and teeth and a perpetual smile. And in the meantime, they were poisoning the minds of our children. They knew exactly what they were doing. Well, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you.